Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. We begin our reading today with an article entitled, Old Loda School Building to Occupy Anti-Aging Research Lab. Loda. It is only fitting that the Loda couple bringing new life to the town's old grade school building have been working for years to find a way to prolong life. Dr. Gerald and Helen Ardsma recently bought the former Loda Grade School on Jefferson Street on the village's north side. Almost 25 years earlier, the scientist, who identifies himself as a conservative Christian, and his wife founded Ardsma Research and Publishing, ARP, with the intent to find an answer to the age-old question of why people age, and to develop a way to reverse the aging process. In 2015, Dr. Ardsma research culminated with the discovery of a previously unknown anti-aging vitamin. More recently, another such vitamin was discovered, and when paired with the first, the two vitamins have proven to have amazing results. There have been a lot of testimonials from people saying that taking the vitamins has definitely benefited their health. A lot of people are saying they're less tired, they don't need as much sleep, and some elderly folks are saying they felt better than they have in years, said Steve Hall, the Ardsma son-in-law, who, along with his wife, Jennifer, serve as the spokespersons for ARP. The Ardsmas plan to use the long vacant grade school building as laboratory and production space for their growing research firm, which has been operated for years on land by their home in Loda. They plan to continue their research of the anti-aging vitamins at the school facility and produce the vitamins there, shipping the product to the expanding number of people who desire to obtain it, Halls said. They need more space because they really haven't had the space, Steve Halls said. They've used their space to the max. The Ardsmas family is currently cleaning up the 96-year-old one-story building with plans to eventually renovate it over time. They hope to be ready to relocate their ARP community there within a couple of months, according to Jennifer Hall. Eventually, perhaps as early by Christmas, the Ardsmas will also be using a portion of the building for the shipping and packaging department of Helen Ardsma Mulberry Lane Farm Company, which ships organic grains nationwide. The business, which was started maybe 15 years ago, has also outgrown its facility by the Ardsmas home, Jennifer Hall said. Dr. Ardsmas two anti-aging vitamins, vitamin MEPIA and vitamin MEPA, are available to people on a gift basis or for free through www.agingcauseandcure.com, Jennifer Hall said. Hundreds of people nationwide are currently taking the vitamins as a daily supplement. Testimonials have revealed how effective they can be to improve the multiple areas of one's health, according to Jennifer. People who suffer from migraines are saying that their migraines are much less frequent. People who suffer from degenerative disc disease are saying that over a matter of weeks or months, their back pain has decreased, Jennifer Hall said. Just basically, the symptoms of aging in general, not being able to sleep very well, or your body taking a long time to heal itself, those kinds of things are reduced with these vitamins. Jennifer Hall said there have even been some dramatic testimonials from people who suffered from life-threatening conditions and were not expected to live long, but were able to pull through. You never know for sure, but we just wonder whether the fact that they were taking these vitamins enabled their bodies to be stronger than they would otherwise have been, Jennifer Hall said. Steve Hall said that, similar to the slow progress of aging, the process of reversing aging is also slow. Years type of thing. However, he said that certain benefits can be seen quickly. Across the board, no matter what the testimonial is about, it's always an improvement. Things got going better than they were, Jennifer Hall said. The biggest thing is prevention. It's much better to start warding off the aging process in your body before it really gets advanced. And that is really what Dr. Ardsma's passion is right now, to make this vitamin supplement known to everyone as much as possible so they can prevent Alzheimer's and cancer and heart disease and just allow their bodies to have what they need at the cellular level to stop that cellular breakdown that causes aging. With a PhD in nuclear physics and radiocarbon dating, Dr. Aardsma approaches his anti-aging research with the idea that aging is actually a disease, not necessarily the natural course of the human body. The Bible, Jennifer Hall noted, indicates that people at one time lived for hundreds of years. He's trying to put together modern science with biblical data, she said. While reversing the course of aging may seem kind of nutty, admitted Steve Hall, research into the topic is expanding in the scientific world. The research is going national right now. I mean, big companies, big money being spent on this topic, Steve Hall said. Dr. Aardsma and his wife are both in their mid-60s and both use the anti-aging vitamins daily. Their health is doing amazingly well, Jennifer Hall said. In fact, it's a quite interesting story. My father had an autoimmune disease, chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, for 11 years that was very debilitating. In fact, his life was hanging in the balance at one point 10 or 15 years ago. But with the discovery of the anti-aging vitamins, he began to take those supplements on a daily basis, and his disease went away within 3 weeks and has never come back, and he's stronger and healthier today than he was back at that time. The Aardsmans have an amazing amount of energy these days, Jennifer Hall added, and it shows that they have been cleaning up the former grade school. They have more energy than my teenagers who were over there helping them, she said. Now to Gibson City. Gibson City eyeing public Wi-Fi speaker system downtown. Gibson City. Seeking to satisfy younger generations and to improve the downtown experience, Gibson City might be adding public Wi-Fi and a speaker system to the downtown area. I think it's a good idea, Mayor Dan Dickey said during Thursday night's meeting of the city's Council's Parks, Buildings, and Technology Committee. For a cost of $65,000, MCS Office Technologies of Gibson City would install several Wi-Fi access points and a three-part speaker system between 7th and 9th Street along Sagamon Avenue downtown. MCS President Todd McNutt said free public Wi-Fi is a growing trend in major cities. The Champaign Park District and Decatur are already starting to offer public Wi-Fi, McNutt said. One new amphitheater is packed full with public Wi-Fi. Cellular data is so good now, but for some reason the people don't have unlimited Wi-Fi, so they hop on free Wi-Fi when they can. Currently, Gibson City has free wireless internet access only at its parks and City Hall, and McNutt said the maximum number of users allowed in those areas is 80, meaning the system can be overrun quickly. With the downtown Wi-Fi system, 4 or 5 access points would be installed. McNutt said the network might still be maxed out during festivals, but otherwise would not be an issue. Dickey asked if the new Gibson City app could be linked to the Wi-Fi connection page as a landing point, and McNutt said it could be possible. One concern raised would be if residents living in downtown apartments decide to use public Wi-Fi instead of buying their own internet. Among ideas floated around included limiting access to the network or turning it off at certain times during the day. Some audience members thought that a 30-minute time limit might be short in case someone is visiting multiple restaurants and businesses in downtown Gibson City. Still, many cited a growing need for Gibson City to modernize with today's trends. I think there's a growing need among young people to have public Wi-Fi wherever they go, said Jim Hood, owner of Hood's Ace Hardware. If they tend to stay longer because they can get their questions answered, the longer they stay, the better. Hood also mentioned that Gibson City does not have strong cellular coverage, and repeaters are not allowed due to a communications tower located 300 feet away behind City Hall. Meanwhile, McNutt said the downtown sound system would have between 24 and 28 speakers with 3 distinct sound zones, based on different parts of downtown Gibson City. If a band was performing at the American Legion post at the corner of 9th and Sagamore Avenue, then the sound could be limited to just that particular area, McNutt said. But other sounds could be broadcast to the whole downtown. Volume could also be changed to different levels in the three zones. The speakers could be controlled via a smartphone app, meaning remote access, and would have an auxiliary plug-in for other sound systems and laptops. Before the 2015 Downtown Revitalization Project, the city's old light poles had a sound system which at one point played WGCY continuously, but that was discontinued after apartment owners complained. The old sound system eventually went away with the old light poles. Alderman Susie Tongate said the proposed sound system, which she stressed is still in the planning stage, could play music at a soft level. I've been in Galena, where the volume is at a level you can't tell it's even playing, at least during the day, Tongate said. McNutt said he has installed sound systems in larger cities which play online music along with advertisements from local businesses. Such a system would have its main control located inside the mayor's office. On some other cities, we've scheduled Sonos to play Pandora Classical from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and then something else in the evenings, McNutt said. That way, no one is having to mess with it. The sound system could also have the ability to support a band with up to 8 microphones involved. Resident Jan Hall asked Dickey if the $65,000 project should be bid out instead of simply hiring MCS. Dickey said he had consulted City Attorney Mark Miller about that question, and Miller said that because this is not a typical project, hiring MCS would be fine. McNutt recommended the city plan on installing the sound system prior to the annual Lighted Christmas Parade in mid-November. And from PBL, PBL schools' proposed budget nearly balanced. Paxton. The Paxton-Buckley-Lota school board members reviewed the school district's proposed budget for the 2020 fiscal year last Wednesday night and then voted to place the budget on public display and set a budget hearing for 6 p.m. September 18th. Superintendent Cliff McClure told the board's finance committee that according to Auditor Russ Lee, the district finished last fiscal year on June 30th with more revenue than expenditures. The 2020 fiscal year began on July 1st with balances of $5,138,650 in the Education Fund, $579,017 in the Operations and Maintenance Fund, $89,016 in the Debt Service Fund, $182,758 in the Transportation Fund, $105,438 in the Municipal Retirement Fund, $12,890,000 in the Capital Projects Fund, $720,982 in the Working Cash Fund, and $529,649 in the Tort Fund. The proposed budget for the 2020 fiscal year is nearly balanced, according to McClure, with the exception of costs associated with the ongoing Clara Peterson Elementary School expansion project. The proposed budget shows projected surpluses in education, $31,619, debt service, $36,438, transportation, $30,823, municipal retirement, $51,853, and working cash, $87,743. Funds with projected deficits are operations and management's, a deficit of $210,951, and capital projects, with a deficit of $11,904,681. McClure said the district is expected to receive more money from the state for its education fund due to evidence-based funding models. McClure also said PBL is receiving a six-figure rebate from the Ford County Special Education Cooperative since the co-op keeps its fund balance near $350,000 yearly, with the rest distributed to the two school districts the co-op serves, Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, and PBL. Spending in operations and maintenance is related to the district's purchasing a truck last year, but only having been billed for it recently. Utility fees are expected to increase as well. McClure said he transferred $175,000 from the Education Fund to the Transportation Fund. McClure said the state continues to prorate transportation payments at 80%, and PBL will not receive the remaining 20%. Transportation expenses included repairs to the bus garage in the amount of $8,000. PBL's insurance rates also saw an increase, McClure added. McClure said workers' compensation went up from last year, and he said more added safety features at Clara Peterson Elementary School will decrease liability, but structural insurance will increase due to the school expansion project. We've experienced higher worker compensations before, McClure said. You just have to be conscientious about it and bring it down. Overall, McClure said the amount of money levied next summer will decrease, although the district's equalized assessed valuation will have increased, meaning some increases in the tax extension. Also from the PBL School District, asbestos abatement to begin Monday at PBL East Lawn School. Paxton. Asbestos abatement inside the former PBL East Lawn School building is expected to begin as early as Monday, August 26th, Paxton Buckley Lota School Board members learned last week. After asbestos abatement is completed around the end of October, demolition will begin on the structure, the school district's oldest building, with a final completion date of December 20th. Paxton City Council last week delegated authority to the city's police chief to close a portion of the 100 block of South Vermilion Street from Center Street to the alley to accommodate the demolition project. PBL East Lawn School 3rd through 5th graders will be moving into a new 63,400 square foot addition built on Clara Peterson Elementary School east side next month. Representatives of Gil Bain Incorporated and Environmental Consultants provided the school board with an update on the progress of the building's addition completion last week, learning that the gym floor has been sealed and painted. Furniture was being moved in as well. Meanwhile, some doors arrived on site had been delayed, and it was not known whether it was due to a transportation or manufacturing issue. Also, the new media center at Clara Peterson was behind schedule and will likely run through the middle of September, the board learned. And now from Lota. Lota to address unaccounted for water usage. Lota. A surprise inspection of Lota's water system by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency revealed that nearly 15% of the water used in the village could not be accounted for. To help address the issue, the village board voted unanimously last Wednesday to install a 4-inch water meter at the local firehouse, which currently has no meter for its water usage. Village board president Carol Arsenault said Weber Fertilizer's facility in Lota also has no water meter, but treasurer Miles Reck said the company has refused to pay to have one installed upon village officials' request. Reck's statement prompted Arsenault and trustee Gene Breeden to suggest having the company's water service shut off. Meanwhile, in another water-related matter, J.R. Tasek, an employee of ERH Enterprises Incorporated, the Westfield-based firm contracted to maintain Lota's water system, told trustees that the former Lota grade school building had been purchased by the Ardsma family, who will be using the facility for two of their businesses. Family requested that water service be set up at the building, so the village will install a 3-inch water meter there. Tasek also mentioned that he had been seen on Facebook that the local fire department was planning a water ball fight. Tasek said he was not against the event itself, but he said the last time such an event was held in Lota, it caused a water main to bust due to the jerking of the water on and off. Tasek said he would attend the next meeting of the fire department's board and explain that the fire department will need to fill a tanker from the top to avoid possible cross-contamination of the village's water. It was also mentioned that resident Jackie Swanstrom had her 14,000-gallon swimming pool filled using a hydrant at a cost of $140. The trustee, Kathy Tittle, said she was under the impression the village could not be filling pools using a hydrant, noting that other requests had been turned down, including her own. However, Arsenault told Tittle that if a resident approaches the board president with such a request, it will be granted. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. Kenneth John Hanford, Roberts. Kenneth John Hanford, 60, of Roberts, died peacefully at his home, surrounded by his loving family, on Tuesday, August 13, 2019. Funeral services were held Tuesday, August 20th at the Onarga Christian Church with longtime friend and international missionary David Poling of Hong Kong officiating, assisted by the Reverend Chuck Jones. Burial followed in Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville with son-in-law Scott Earhart presiding. Memorials may be made to the Onarga Christian Church's Bell Tower Fund or the Prairie States Christian Service Camp. Sandra S. Reynolds, Gibson City. Sandra S. Reynolds, 77, of Gibson City, died Monday, August 12, 2019, at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. A celebration of life service will be at 3 p.m., Saturday, August 31st, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with the Reverend John Tennyson officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m., Saturday, August 31st, at the funeral home. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson Area Hospital Auxiliary or the Gibson United Methodist Church. Veva Pearl Lang, Chatsworth. Veva Pearl Lang, 94, of Chatsworth, a native of Piper City, died at 4:50 p.m. Monday, August 19, 2019, at Piper City Rehab and Living Center in Piper City. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 24th, at the Calvary Baptist Church in Chatsworth with the Reverend Ed Bunt officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 23rd, at the Calvert and Martin Funeral Home in Chatsworth, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 24th, at the church. Burial will follow the funeral services at the Chatsworth Charlotte Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Calvary Baptist Church in Chatsworth. Deborah K. Debbie Harper, Mansfield. Deborah K. Debbie Harper, 58, of Mansfield, mother of a Roberts resident, died at 12:05 p.m. Friday, August 16, 2019, at her home. Visitation will be from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, August 25th, at the Mansfield United Methodist Church. A private family memorial service and private family interment will be held at a later date at the Mansfield Cemetery. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Crystal Lynn Berry, Hinsdale. Crystal Lynn Berry, 38, formerly of Gibson City, died Thursday, August 15, 2019, at the Hinsdale Hospital in Hinsdale. A celebration of her life will be at 10 a.m. Monday, August 26th, at the Trinity Evangelical Church in Watseka. She will be interred at the Berry Plot in Pena. Memorial donations may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. We return to the news with a story entitled, Lightning Strike Suspected as Cause of House Fire Near Melvin. Rural Melvin. A vacant home near Melvin was destroyed by fire early Wednesday morning, likely the result of lightning striking a nearby tree, Melvin's fire chief said. An estimated 30 firefighters from Melvin, Roberts, and Gibson City responded around 4:20 a.m. to the blaze at the unoccupied two-story home at 925 North Ford County Road 800 East, said Larry Boundy, chief of the Melvin Fire Department. Upon arrival, the west end of the house was fully engulfed with flames entering the attic and second story. Lee Farms Excavating of Paxton was called to assist in tearing down the structure, Bounty said. Bounty said he suspects the fire was caused by lightning striking a tree next to the house. Bounty noted that the tree bark was damaged and the wooden bench next to the tree was burnt up. We think the lightning might have followed the electrical line into the house, Bounty said. Firefighters cleared the scene around 8:30 or 9 a.m. They were called back to the scene late Wednesday morning after fire reportedly had been rekindled. And from Rankin, proposed cannabis business in Rankin draws healthy mix of concerns, positive feedback. Rankin. Dave and Kane Michael Emling fielded what he termed a healthy mix of both concerns and positive feedback about his plans to locate a cannabis cafe, bakery, and dispensary in the Vermilion County village of Rankin during a public hearing last week. I think it went pretty good, the 30-year-old Rankin man said after a few dozen people attended the August 13th hearing at the Rankin's Lions Club building. We had a good ratio of people who had legitimate concerns and people who were all for it. Emling said he felt a majority in attendance were at least open to his business being located in the town of 617 people. Resident Deborah Savoni noted that the sales tax revenue that such a business would bring to the village. While municipalities can prohibit cannabis business from locating within their communities, Savoni noted that it would be foolish to pass on such revenue when recreational marijuana use will be legal in Illinois starting January 1st, and we aren't going to be able to stop it. Savoni also said she does not feel that Emling's business will bring any more riffraff to town than we already have right now. Meanwhile, others expressed concern about Rankin's lacking its own police force or kids gaining access to the cannabis that would be sold. Emling responded to the concern about children having access to the drug by explaining that only adults age 21 and older will be able to buy marijuana, and that the only way children would be able to access it would be irresponsible handling of the product by whoever had bought it. Emling said he fully expected a blend of complete naysayers who didn't want anything to do with it, and of course the heck yeah, we're totally for it crowd. Several board members were in attendance as well. Board President Aaron Warren said the boards will further discuss the matter at its next meeting at 6 p.m., Tuesday, September 3rd, at the Rankin Public Library. Warren noted that the discussions are still in the very beginning stages about whether to allow the business to open. Emling said Rankin is just one possible location for the business. He said he is also considering setting up shop in other towns nearby, or even at his own 6-acre horse farm located about a half mile north of Rankin. It is at his farm where he plans to set up a cannabis growing facility that would produce the product needed for his cafe, bakery, and dispensary operation. That's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again real soon.